Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Would You Data Scientist? I am Wendy Gannon, your host, and I'm joined today by Joseph Cooper, Head of Data Science at ClubView. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm very good, thank you. Yes, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good. So apologies to anybody if we get distractions from my dog, who's currently gnawing on my hand. He's very excited. It's about that time of the day where we usually go out. But yeah, I do like to ask twice, how are you? How's life been treating you?
Yeah, pretty good. I recently moved, actually, so I've just been building out my office and trying to kit it out with things. So obviously people won't be able to see, but I've kind of like got a little bit of furniture here and a little bit there, but nothing's quite sorted yet. But anyway, that's been really exciting, so I'm very good.
It looks like you're in a loft.
I am in a loft, yes. You can kind of see that, like,
there's the hatch in the loft. Oh, yeah, that looks cool.
Just recently did everything up, yeah.
Where have you moved to?
Moved to Shrewsbury, actually, yeah. It's on the border with Wales, so it's in Shropshire.
Okay, lovely. Well, let's get cracking. What's your favourite piece of tech ever?
I don't know if you'd classify it as tech. But because I'm so involved with it and have so much experience with it, I'd say that the tech of Python itself, the programming language,
okay.
I love that. I think it basically got me into programming and data science itself and trying to build things. So I think that piece of technology, that software, I just loved so much.
So is it what's behind it, what drives it, rather than how to write it?
No, I'd say the actual programming language itself, the ability it gives you to build new applications and new pieces of analysis, that kind of ability that it gives you, I think, is really great. Yeah.
Brilliant. Okay. So, right, let's get into your career. So you're working at ClubView at the moment as head of data science. Can you talk me through your career and how you got into data science?
Yeah, so, you know, a number of years back now, I was doing my PhD in astrophysics. So this was all based around trying to discover exoplanets. So I had these huge, vast data sets of stars. And I used a couple of different machine learning algorithms. And this is where I first kind of dipped my toes into data science, because we used a combination of random forest algorithms, some kind of Bayesian statistics, and some Markov chain statistics as well to decide which planets we would actually look at and observe. So that was kind of like the start of everything, was my PhD.
Okay, and then, that's interesting.
Yeah, and then from there, I did a data science course. So I tried to transition into it because I knew straight away that there were loads of elements of data science that I'd already used and I had good experience with, and I really enjoyed as well. Like, I enjoyed using some of the methodologies and especially the kind of machine learning element, the fact that you could create a program that kind of taught itself how to perform a task. I think I really enjoyed that aspect. So that's when I made an initial transition to actually looking into data science. And then from there, I got a job at a company called Beamly, which I worked at for a little while. I kind of did, you know, the starting elements of data science. I started off doing the classic XGBoost models and, you know, simple stuff like that. Learned the trade a bit more. I think, a couple of us at that company decided that we would start ClubView, which is a football-based AI company. So it's all about trying to benchmark financial performance of clubs, so football clubs, rugby clubs, anything like that. And that's kind of how that journey started. And now I've been working there for over 2 years now. Yeah, I think it's been 2.5. Yeah.
That's good.
That's kind of the journey so far.
That's great. I love that you started your own thing with your friends, doing something that you're really passionate about.
It wasn't exactly that way, actually. It wasn't, they are my friends, obviously. but yeah, it was something actually that I was invited into. So it was, I knew a couple of people who had started ClubView originally. So right. The founders, the founding team, I knew a few of them from Beamly, which was the company that we worked at together. And I think that they were relatively impressed with the work that I'd done at that company and invited me to come along and be the lead data scientist at Clubview.
Brilliant. Brilliant. What football team do you support?
Shrewsbury Town, of course, which is why I've moved here.
Is it actually?
Yeah, it is. Brilliant. Yeah, I've supported them for years. So yeah, I've come back home now, but I did. I grew up here, and then I moved down to London.
Right.
You know, to the big city to, you know, get a nice job and make my career. And then you know when lockdown hit and we were work from home policy started to be used in different companies, I thought, you know, now's the time. I can move out again. I can come back.
Brilliant. Oh no, I love that. I think a lot of people have done that, and it's great going back home with familiarity and get out of the rat race. I've actually done the opposite. I've moved to London, from the more suburban, Basingstoke, you know, more rural. But yeah. So, have you come across any struggles in your career?
Yeah, I mean, loads of struggles. There's lots of things that are tricky about getting into data science. I'd say one is competition in a way. It's a competitive field, and it's a field with a lot of different opinions of how you should do things, etiquette, and kind of the principles around how you use data science. So I'd say that there's a lot of people who are purists and you know really want you to understand data science. And there's some people who kind of look more at the out-of-the-box solutions and think more about how can we implement this in production. And you know, there's a place for everyone. But I say that I definitely struggle to figure out which of these I lean towards more. You know, early on, I definitely struggled to figure out, do I really want to understand the algorithm that I'm using to such an extent that I could rebuild it, you know, if I wanted to. And where do I cut corners? You know, that can be a tricky line to draw. I think definitely over time I've leaned towards understanding the algorithm. I think it just gets you get a lot more value out of what you're doing, I think, if you really understand what's going on, which I think I've kind of benefited from over time.
I think that's you could put that to anything, couldn't you? If you understand the workings behind it, you're going to be able to do a better job of it, potentially. I completely see that.
I'd say you can ask me. I'd say, you know, another thing as well, I should, you know, talk about is with Beamly, actually. When I switched from Beamly to joining Clubview, I'd already made that decision, and I already decided that I was going to, you know, work for Clubview. So in some ways it was relatively convenient timing, but still that company actually went under as well. So it was put into administration by the larger company while I was still actually employed with them. Which is difficult, you know, and it's a risk that definitely, you know, it's there for a lot of people. You risk, especially with new startups and some of these London companies. I think it is relatively easy for companies to go under. So yeah, that was a bit of a struggle as well. I was a bit panicked. I was like, what am I going to do? But I did join Clubview, and that was obviously in the end it turned out to be amazing, because obviously it meant that I joined a company that I now really love and I've got a lot out of. But it was stressful at the time, that's for sure. Especially I was moving house then as well. So I was double stressed because I was moving house and I lost my job. So I was like, oh God.
So the uncertainty is really scary. I've been made redundant quite a few times in my life. Every time it turned out to be the best thing that could have ever have happened. I know you're scared and worried and it's awful as it's happening, but yeah, it can lead you to bigger and better things. So if you are going through that, please reach out. I can help you through that, and it's not the be all and end all, and you know, it can be so much better.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Obviously, it can be. It's very stressful, but yeah, I think that from talking to a lot of people, people often get more out of being made redundant sometimes than they lose. Really,
yeah, definitely. I think it gives you it gives you that motivation to do something about your career when you were not necessarily going to do it in the first place, and you can see what your worth is, and you know, you can actually clearly see where you want to go and progress with your career.
So, yeah, it forces your hand effectively. Like, you've got nothing to lose, have you? So you might as well do something.
Exactly that. Just to let everybody know that I can help you with my coaching if you are feeling like that, and can help you see the bigger picture. So what's the your most favourite project you've ever done?
I'd probably say that the work that I've done at Clubview, to be fair, is some of my favourites. So one of the algorithms that we have, which I've enjoyed a lot working on, has been our attendance module. I can't go into loads of details on how it works, obviously, but sure. that's been a lot of fun because you know, we've met up with a lot of clubs and, you know, talked to them about what they, and every single club you go to, there's always someone in the club who knows what the attendance is going to be for that game, right. And they are usually right, like shockingly well. Like even though I've seen attendance data for loads of clubs and I know how much it varies, I know how wild it is. So you'd think that it'd be like relatively impossible to predict. But no, there's always someone in the club in their senior or executive board who can just tell you what's going to be like within a couple hundred people, which is really amazing. So I've loved that project because then it's trying to compete with them and trying to beat their model, their own mental model has always been really fun. So brilliant. I've enjoyed that project a lot.
I guess with football, it's so like the fan base is so loyal and they love it so much that you've got your season ticket holders that are going to go all the time. Probably only sickness maybe that's going to stop it. And then you've got your other tickets that are, you know, if it's an away game for your team and you live there, you're not going to miss it. You're not going to miss it if you've managed to get a ticket. So, yeah, I mean, that's me simplifying everything that you do.
Yeah, it's much more complicated than that.
Everybody goes, that's it, the end.
And that's certainly true for a lot of Premier League clubs. Like a lot of Premier League clubs, almost every single game is sold out. But we deal with all sorts of clubs. It's not just Premier League clubs, and a lot of the middle league clubs, so like Championship, League One, League Two, they have quite varying attendance, and it can be quite hard to predict. So yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah, cool. Okay, so what do you think the most interesting part of data science is? It's so broad. There's so many different things that you can do. I know you said about algorithms and Python and stuff like that, but what's the most interesting part to you?
I guess I would give two answers, right? I'd say one of the most interesting parts, but you can generalize this to kind of software engineering in general, is I think the ability to build. I kind of alluded to it earlier that, like, I think that creating something through programming, I find at least very satisfying. I think that it's really amazing to build things and to build new applications and to build new algorithms and so on. So I think that element of it is one of the things that I find most exciting, just about kind of programming in general, software engineering and data science. And then with data science, I would say that it's kind of the beauty of actually creating something that can learn for itself and that can adapt with time, like trying to create that perfect solution with mathematics. I always loved mathematics when I was growing up anyway. Did as many maths courses as I could at A level and uni as well. So I always loved that element anyway. And I love trying to create that kind of solution with very elegant mathematics. So yeah, those are the bits that I enjoy the most.
Okay, I love that. So as you know, this podcast is aimed at people who are trying to get into data science, either through learning or wanting to pivot into it from their current role, maybe doing a boot camp, etc. Have you got any advice for those people?
Yeah, I would say that trying to do hands-on building of these algorithms is something that I would definitely advise. Something that I did early on was try and build some of the classic algorithms by hand. So no using any of these packages like scikit-learn or pandas or anything like that. Not trying to use any of that.
Okay.
Just trying to build it by hand, just with pure Python. And I would advise that for the simple ones, like try and build a neural net by hand. It is possible. You can do it in very few lines of code. Try and build random forests in just a few lines of code. All of these things are totally possible. You can Google how to do them. And I think that doing that like early on definitely gave me a really good understanding, because I didn't do mathematics at university or statistical learning at university. So I didn't have an understanding fully of how all of these algorithms worked when I first joined the field. And I think that really helped me trying to actually hands-on code them without any kind of packaging behind them. Really, really helped. So that's one thing I would advise.
Okay.
Another thing I would advise is to think about what you really want to do in the field.
Mm-hmm.
So there are definitely algorithms and methodologies that you'll enjoy and not enjoy. There's some kind of classic ones that people think of as NLP. Some people enjoy doing that, working with neural nets and images. Some people enjoy doing that sort of thing. There's genetic and evolutionary algorithms as well that you can look at. I would look at these different fields, and I wouldn't try to be a master of all of them, but definitely know all of them a little bit. But definitely pick one that you really enjoy and focus more on it. I would do that.
Brilliant.
I think it will really help you later on. Like I've definitely focused more on, I've done a lot of study on evolutionary algorithms. I've really enjoyed studying them and understanding in depth how they work and how to improve them, which I've taken into my career and utilize a lot in various different ways, whether it would be interviews or just using them in actual production as well. Okay. It can just be useful in all sorts of ways.
Perfect.
So yeah, I would advise that.
Really good advice. I've not heard the first piece of advice before. So that's really, really good. I thought of this question the other day. If you could do any project, work on anything, build an algorithm to do anything, what would it be?
Oof, that is a tough one.
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to say some things I would say, and I know that attempts are definitely being made to do them. Like, because obviously I'm heavily involved with the sports industry, immediately my mind goes to, I want to predict who's going to win the game. That is what I want to do. Obviously, every gambling company ever is trying to do that.
That's
their main goal.
Hi.
But yeah, I also would love to see, I've seen a little bit around this, but I'd love to see more in terms of AI and analysis on pitch performance, not in the sense of raw statistics, but more in predicting where different moves should be made. For example, with football, I know that I think it was Liverpool Football Club did this analysis recently. they did some analysis where they were trying to look at best places to pass the ball on average if you're in certain positions. They were specifically looking at like a particular position. They were looking at like centre midfield. They were wondering, you know, if you lob the ball over players, where's the best place to put it? And I think I thought that analysis was really interesting. I'd love to see more of that around on the field performance to see, you know, where would the ball go and, you know, what's the probabilities of me making it to a player and so on. So I think that would be interesting as well.
Very,
but that's very specific to my field.
So I had a partner who is an avid Liverpool fan and taught me everything, gegenpress, you know, everything. So I like can understand that. And it's like, so Henderson to Alexander Arnold, that would be, wouldn't it? Right.
Something
okay.
Like that, yeah.
Yeah. So, what do you think data science is going to be in the future?
Well, it's a broad question.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things that
take
I'm sure
it however
happen.
You want to. I've got lots of broad questions.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there's a lot of room for change. That's for sure. I mean, you know, I think 10 years ago, if you looked at articles about data science and, you know, read up what was going on in the field, you would have seen a lot of articles around, you know, how data science is going to be the future, how it's the new industry. And, you know, I'm pretty sure there was articles about it being the sexiest job of 2010 or something like that. And I'd say that, let's say that model is true, and let's say it's like the car industry. When the car industry exploded, loads of jobs were created. It was like a brand new field with, it was really exciting, and there's loads of money in it as well. So it's obviously a really exciting time. So if we take that as the truth, then, you know, a similar sort of thing we could maybe expect happen. Like, a lot of people will enter this job. It will become quite competitive, but it will become more refined. And I think there'll be a lot of opportunity for people to continue to come into this field and, you know, develop new areas of it as well. So, you know, I think there's a lot of growth to be done. It is tricky to say what it's going to be like in the future. Yeah. I imagine that more and more algorithms become unified. You know, I think there's talk among, I can't remember his name now, but I saw a tweet by one of the kind of great minds of data science saying that they thought that effectively more and more algorithms are going to become unified across different domains within data science. So NLP and image classification are looking more and more similar because they both use neural nets.
Yep.
And it's becoming that way across even more domains as well. So it's interesting how we're probably going to get to a state where we use very, very similar models for completely different tasks. And it's more about really understanding in depth that model and how to use it and refining that than it is developing brand new fields of data science, because we've kind of explored those quite a lot. So maybe that'll happen as well.
Okay. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's hard to know really how things are going to go.
Yeah.
Certainly, I'd say that there's, you know, a huge value in having a data science team, and almost every company out there knows that now. And so there's definitely loads of room for people to enter the field and grow within it. I think that's, like, you know, one point to take away.
And any person who is looking to build their data science team, also come and speak to me. I can do that for you. So, okay. So let's talk about diversity a little bit. How have you found the diversity of data science teams in your career? How's that been looking?
Depends in what way. When it comes to gender diversity, I don't think it's actually been too bad.
Yep.
I think overall it's been okay. Like, ClubView has had a few data scientists come and go, and we've had quite a number of female data scientists come into the company.
Good.
Same with software engineers as well. So we haven't been too bad on that front. When it comes to racial diversity, though, I would say that it's not amazing. I would say that I don't know many racially diverse people within data science, which is kind of sad. I don't know if that's just circumstance or what, really. But yeah, I've definitely noticed it. I've noticed it in interviews as well. I've noticed that I haven't had many interviews with a particularly diverse set of people, to be honest.
That's really interesting. That's really interesting because as a recruiter, when I search... it's really very diverse. So maybe it could be the way that the job description's written.
It could be.
It could be the way that where you're posting it, that it's not getting seen as much. And I can help you with that. I'm more than happy to help you with that. No charge. I'm more than happy to help with that if that's something you want to have a look at. Maybe a case study or something to see. Yeah, like, I mean, we can talk about it afterwards, but that is very interesting. It could be the area that you're in, you know. So I spoke to somebody in Northern Ireland the other day, and there was no racial diversity at all. But that's Northern Ireland, and I wonder if it's I don't know, but it's definitely something that needs to be addressed throughout. I know there are so many data scientists looking to come over from other countries. Nigeria have got some absolutely super duper talented people. It's just difficult to come over. Would you I suppose it's not a question for you, would you ever consider sponsoring somebody from another country?
Yeah, definitely, that's something that we've done in the past. I think we've done a sponsorship before in the past at ClubView, at least. Definitely, yeah. other companies will always be up for doing it as well, I'm sure. Like most companies would be happy to do that.
It's very difficult. It's really difficult. So I've got lots of people asking me this question at the moment. How do they come over and work in this country? And so the last podcast that I recorded was a lady from India, and how she came over here. So it's interesting to hear from a hiring manager's point of view, that you potentially offer sponsorship. So the advice that we're giving is go to companies directly and ask that question, which seems to be the right advice to be giving.
Yeah, I would say that's true. Yeah, I don't think companies are afraid of giving sponsorship for people to come from other countries.
Yeah, I think it's probably less expensive than a recruiter fee to do that. So, So let's talk ethics within data science. How can we ensure that AI is completely diverse?
Oh, well, I don't know. That is tricky. I mean, I'm not sure if it's something that I've come across much. I'm trying to think if any of our algorithms we've really had to. So, to be fair, I can think of a good kind of example where. Well, I'm not sure if I should talk about it though, I'll talk about it anyway. But yeah, so when I was working at Beamly, actually, we had a project.
I mean, they're gone now. It's fine.
yeah, but they're still owned by Coty, so Coty could still be upset with me talking about it. But it doesn't matter too much. Because I'm not going to say anything bad. we worked on this project. I can't remember what it was called now. Virtual Makeup Artist, that's what it was called.
Okay.
And so the idea, I think it's live in a couple of companies, like Debenhams had it for ages. And I think Max Factor, you can still use this little app. And basically, you could hold your phone up and kind of take a live recording of your face and kind of selfie. And then you could choose which makeup products you wanted to use, and it would apply it to your face. And this was interesting in terms of like ethics and how we'd built the model, because we found with the initial screening that there are a lot of complaints from people who weren't white. And we were wondering what was going on and why that was happening. And part of the reason that that had happened is because obviously when we were developing it, when we were testing it, most of the devs were doing a lot of the debugging. So they were holding the phone up and taking a selfie, and most of the devs that we had were white. So we had a bit of an issue where it wasn't trained very well to any other skin tone very, very well. We very quickly, like, you know, all credit to Coty and Beamly at the time, we very quickly realized the problem and retrained the model on like a more diverse set of people.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's an interesting one because obviously there's ethics behind that. You know, we don't want to have a worse experience for a particular set of people just because we didn't train the model properly on them.
Exactly.
Which is something that obviously you need to be aware of. It's not something that I've encountered that much in football because we don't actually have that diverse set of features to even know who.
So you don't need that in the data, in the model. You don't need that data, so it's not affected.
Yeah, I guess we assume that. I'm not sure though, to be honest. Like maybe we should add more about the demographics of the attendees, for example, because maybe there's something in the data that would affect attendance based.
I mean, there definitely would be, wouldn't there? Yeah,
exactly. Yeah.
And I think if you've got a diverse team, and those things are going to get picked up quite quickly, that this might happen, or you know, so if your dev team weren't or white, that would have been noticed when they were doing the debugging. And I think if you had more of a diverse, I'm not attacking you, by the way. I don't want you to sound like I'm attacking diverse. If there was somebody in your team who was a person of colour or was transgender, something like that, then maybe they would know what data to look for and be able to expand the algorithm. Just something to think about. If you do need any help with that, I'm genuinely happy to help you. But I'm not going to push myself on you. Okay, so imagine that there is, so all of the billionaires in the world, imagine that they are all evil. I'm sure they're all not evil. And they have built a supervillain with all of the millions that they've got, and they want to take over the world. How are we going to stop them from doing that? And what punishment should they get?
Well, I don't know. How are they going to take over the world?
Well, if they build a supervillain, have you seen the new Hollow Man film?
No, I haven't.
No. Really. So it's that the guy is a billionaire and he builds a suit that can make him invisible, right?
Right.
And then he goes around committing horrible things.
I'm not sure what would happen, because if all of the billionaires in the world decided that they were going to team up together and create a supervillain, I'm guessing that there would be a lot of support from most people to not want that to happen and to oppose them.
But would we know about it? Would we know about it until it was done?
That's a good point, yeah. I mean, maybe we should create some sort of, you know, detection algorithms to try and detect the superhero and then...
Do it.
And then at least we can track him and then, yeah, I don't know, send that information to different governments and try and coordinate some sort of resistance. I guess this is what we'd go for.
Okay, yeah. Okay, I think I might need to start changing that question with everything that's going on at the moment.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So have you got anything that you'd like to talk about, Joe? Anything you'd like to plug?
I mean not in particular, to be honest. I still want to give a shout out to good old Club View. You know, it's an interesting time at Club View at the moment, because we're still kind of pushing to kind of develop the product properly for all the clubs. We've got loads of clubs using the product at the moment, which is really great, which is basically trying to provide financial benchmarking that's independent and real time for clubs. So it's more about off the pitch performance than on the pitch performance. But I definitely obviously want to give a shout out to Club View in general, because you know, it's really important for the game. It's something that we're really keen to try and emphasize to everyone, people who you know, interested in a career at in sports in general, when it comes to sports or sports with data science, that something that we need to sort out within all sports is financial regulation. There's been
100%.
Yeah, exactly. There's been loads of clubs that have you know, gone bankrupt and been fined for it and so on. And
loads of clubs that have got money that they shouldn't necessarily have.
Yeah, and it's not necessarily down to any financial mismanagement, but having a view on those finances, a real-time view, is something that you know, is becoming more and more important for clubs.
Yeah.
And that's something that ClubView provides. So it's definitely, and it's needs to be more about the movement as well, of trying to support companies that want to enable change within this industry, which is quite a, you know, old industry at the moment. There's a lot of, it's a bit of an old boys club, but I think that they're slowly accepting that ClubView is actually going to really help. I definitely think it's worth saying that about ClubView.
That's good. I actually know somebody, well, I'm going to talk to you afterwards, that might be able to help you.
That's good. Right. Yeah, we always want to talk to more people about it.
Happy to network. Always networking. All right, Joe. Well, look, thank you so much for joining me. I really, really appreciate you taking the time. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's been brilliant. Thank you so much.